OER.
I'm not sure how to work this. That's
this one,
Chris.
Gotcha. Okay, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you all tonight. OER's budget's a little bit simpler than everything you just went through, so I'll start with a couple of the questions that were asked just to give you an idea of what's happening with OER about staff. And over the last, in the past 3 years, we have reduced our staff from 4.8 FTEs to 3.6 FTEs. In that same period of time, our caseload has increased 36%. So we are also a unique agency in that, besides the fact that we report to public safety other than Human Services Committee, Health and Human Services, we also are very, very heavily county funded. So when funding was reduced by you all over the last few years with the hard times, it hit OER in a rough way. This is really a status quo maintenance. This $25,000 sounds like a lot of money, but it will only allow OER to continue with 3.6 FTEs. We have not had a raise in 3 years. It does not allow for any raises, and it doesn't increase any hours. From the sheet that you saw that was handed out by Human Services Committee, we asked for $68,000 this year. That was to increase staff hours, not to hire additional staff, but to increase staff hours to cover the to help cover the increase in caseload. OER basically depleted its reserve fund in 2012 to maintain 3.6 FTEs. That reserve fund was not built out of county funding. It was we received $25,000 in one-time state funding in 2008 for some transition work. We were able to deliver the work on that contract to the state satisfaction and create a reserve fund for the first time in OER's history. That reserve fund is what allowed us to continue through 2012 at 3.6 FTEs. I think many of the other agencies in this community are in the same shape we are. They've reduced staff. I think many of my other colleagues also have not seen a raise in 3 years. I don't think we're unique, but those are some of the fundamentals that I just wanted to present to you. And so this $25,000, we really appreciate it, because without this $25,000 increase recommended by the county administrator, we would have to lay off staff. 85.3% of OER's budget is personnel. So we've cut to the bone. I don't know, you're all welcome to come see our offices at 518 West Seneca Street. We just got heat on today. We don't have air conditioning in the summer, and it's they're not exactly very fancy digs, so there's not a lot of other place to cut money. We ask for donations of even copying paper from different people. We really cut everything else to the bone, and so if we didn't receive this $25,000, we would be reducing staff further. I also did want to point out that in 2011, OER's work through the bail fund saved the county $405,000 in averted jail costs, boarding out. And so far this year, our bails are running ahead of schedule over last year substantially. Staff has really, really been pushing. I mean, they're really at their limits. They're only paid for 35 hours of work a week. They regularly work in excess of 40 hours. And this year we're projecting saving the county $472,000 in averted jail costs. So we've been cut to the bone. If we were going to continue with, I can't ask staff to do any more. I mean, it's already 36% increase in caseload and losing one person in that three-year period. It's staff's really dedication to the program, to the people we serve, that has allowed us to continue the work that we've been able to do. So I would like to request, in addition to the county administrator's generous recommendation. I would like to request an additional $25,000 for OAR in 2013, $10,000 of which to be used for the bail fund, and $15,000 to be used to increase staff hours and to provide a modest raise for my client service workers and my operations manager.
So that's a new request right now?
Yep.
In real time?
In real time.
Okay.
Live.
We have that coming. Okay. Questions for Deb? Peter Stein. And then Pam.
That $25,286 that I see up there, that is target, right?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Now, the $10,000 for the bail fund, I think we might enjoy a bit of an understanding of why it is you're making that. The bail fund is a revolving fund, and you never consume it. So why is it that you need more? Are there times when you've run out of money and you can't give people bail, or what?
Yeah, the last, in the past, what we have done with the bail fund is come to you and asked for funding out of the contingency fund when our bail fund got down very close to zero. What I try to do this year at Joe's request was included in this year's request, so it was part of that $68,000 that shows up on that green sheet, included some money for the bail fund. The bail fund does revolve, but over 7 years we've had $18,000 in since 2007 we've had $18,000 in forfeitures. It's a very low rate when you think about the tens of thousands of dollars that filter through the process, but it is still $18,600 in forfeitures since 2007. Right now the bail fund is around, I think we've got about 2,500 to 3,000. We've been making so many bails. The other issue that affects the bail fund is the number of bails we make. This year, year to date, we've made 59 as of this afternoon. And so that means the money goes down. We then try to get the money back, of course, from the courts, but we don't get the money back until the case is disposed of.
But you're running into problems, right, with the ability to make the bail. That's why you're asking for $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, I'm anticipating. I'm not at zero now. I'm at $2,500, but we bail up to $2,500, and it means that staff has to spend tomorrow morning and most of Friday calling judges and trying to beg for money back that is overdue, and so we keep trying to feed it up, but it doesn't give us much wiggle room.
Well, you've convinced me, but not the county administrator, so I would like to understand why the county administrator was not willing to fund that $10,000 request.
Excuse me, one moment.
Yeah.
Peter, you're talking about $10,000. Is that $10,000 in the new $25,000?
Yeah, that's $10,000 of that new $25,000.
Okay, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, the way we looked at it, and by the way, this is a hard one, because what Deb says is very true. They are bare bones, and certainly they don't live a life of luxury in that operation. The way we looked at the 25, it was a 16% increase in county funding to the agency. Some of that money can be allocated to replenish the bail fund or to augment the bail fund. The balance can go to support operating costs. And that was kind of an issue that can really be looked at after the budget is approved. So some of that money would be available for that purpose. So, again, in terms of capacities, and I've said this every time the question comes up about why didn't you do something within a 3.5% levy limit, we did what we felt we could. And, again, I think if you look at the agencies, this is probably the largest single percentage increase to an agency except for TCAD, which was, I think, 2,200%. But at 16%, I think this is probably the largest increase in agency funding in the budget.
But I'm sure, I mean, I would be surprised if you would like it if we're not able to bail somebody out because the bail fund simply didn't have the money in it.
Right.
And that doesn't seem like a place we would want to be in. This seems to have a sort of I can't think of anything else which is quite like this, okay, where you run out of money and that means it costs you money. So,
And we have made emergency allocations to this department on a very short-term basis, through the Budget Committee and also through the legislature.
And again, the approach here was, with $25,000 in hand, the agency will need to make a decision on how much of that money should be allocated for the bail fund, how much kept back for operating costs. So we really delegated that to the agency. That's the way we looked at the $25,000.
Okay, thank you.
Pam.
Well, my question was similar. It was to Joe, because I mean, this, we are actually, the return on our investment here is enormous. I mean, we invest however much money we give them. What was it? Last year, it was 2012, we invested $163,000 in that agency, and they saved us $472,000 in jail costs. I don't think you get that on the stock market. And I mean, I think that we are penny wise and pound foolish by not funding this agency and this bail fund to a degree. I mean, the fact that just the agency time of trying to get the money from the judges, I mean, you think about that, the hours in the agency spent on that. I really would like to have us revisit this because I just don't, I don't understand that thinking. So.
I have Brian.
Actually, there's a few, and we did have discussion in public safety about this, but Pam, just so at least it's my understanding. The estimated cost savings that you had, that's a moving target. That's not an exact science.
Correct, Brian. What we do is we figure each bail saves the county approximately $6,750. That's built on the assumption of about $90 a day for a person to be in the jail, mm-hmm. which is a little low actually now. But on the assumption that it's about 75 days on average between being jailed and when it's resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, it's a fudgy number.
Yeah, it's a moving target, and I can just say that my experience has been that it's at least possible that, especially out in the local courts, if they have bail, then they're not inclined to reduce bail because they already have it. And so that, which they may do in other circumstances when they don't have it. Now, we're not even talking about our ability to get that back from them, which is another problem. I would like to know what you plan on doing with the 25. You don't have to tell me right now. And it would be fine with me if that were all operating costs.
I can tell
and,
you.
And not bail fund. I'm particularly not a big fan of increases to the bail fund being in target. I would rather have them be one time that keep coming back to us just so that we have an explanation as to what's going on. And, Peter, to your point, it is quite a bit similar to board outs, which used to be target within our budgets, and now they're not. So we continually, every month, we get reports of what's going on with board outs. So that we can kind of track it on an ongoing basis because we get asked about that all the time, or at least I do, from folks. So I don't particularly mind that those remain for the bail fund now, that those remain one-time monies and not into target, because once they're into target, we don't know unless you happen to tell us. Just like we don't know right now what that 25, how you're going to divvy that up. We don't know that.
Well, I'm willing to say that the $25,000 is the almost exact amount that we tapped the reserve fund for to fund 3.6 FTEs in 2012. That we tapped our OAR's reserve fund, so that I need that money, $25,000, to keep 3.6 FTEs at the same rate of pay with no pay increase or anything else.
Okay.
To continue to do the same number of bails. I can't continue to do the number of bails if I reduce the FTEs any further.
Okay. So that is going to operating costs, and the bail fund is going to be a whole separate matter, probably,
yeah,
as it has been.
We do have a line of credit that OAR has used, our own personal line of credit, for bails in the past. Obviously, it's not a good business model to keep tapping a line of credit because there's finance charges and things on it. And in the past, I have come to you when we've found ourselves unable to get enough money to continue to make bails at the rate we're making to ask for more money for the bail fund.
Mm-hmm. I have Levin, but I'm going to let Joe in here just for a moment.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, we did ask Deb to include the bail fund request as a part of the annual budget. Because at least once and maybe twice since I've been here, it's been a mid-year ask.
Right.
And it comes sometimes at a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. So we felt it was better to get that request into the budget discussion for the annual budget. So if you choose to amend this budget to include other funds, one-time or target or whatever, we do think it's a better practice to cover both sides of the House as a part of the annual budget process.
So what is both sides of the House?
The bail fund and the operating costs for the operation.
Okay. So with that said, let me ask a follow-up then. As it pertains to board outs, how do those get paid? Because we're looking at a much larger number than this.
Yeah.
And they don't get returned, whereas, you know, in a perfect world, we would get returned 100% of that money.
Right. Well, board outs are in two places, in the sheriff's budget, but also in a contingency budget. So when we build the budget, we have the contingency account large enough to cover anticipated board out costs. So it's in the contingency line of the budget. So there's money there, and that's really why that reporting is so frequent to you, because you have to authorize the pull of that money out of a contingency account into the regular budget, so they need to keep you informed about how it's going to prepare you for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have Leslie over here. People raised their hand over here. Who was it? Dooley and anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Leslie.
Thank you. Far be it from me to make comparisons of agencies, but we all know that this is an agency that our general public isn't quick to jump up and give money to because of the nature of the work and who they are supporting. But I have a question around the OTR. I had a difficulty following the numbers in this. Granted, it's only $25,000 that the county administrator has recommended, but priority number one had $10,000, $15,000, $40,000, and $26,000, which did not add up to $68,000. So
I'm sorry.
So I'm just wondering.
I don't have those numbers in front of me, Leslie. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's in your book.
Never mind my question then.
Oh, sorry. I guess it's right in front of me. I didn't see it under my nose. What page is this?
Page 40.
Page 40. I think this is another situation of these targets, these numbers having moved since we first put this book was put together earlier in the year.
Okay.
Okay.
So, all right. So what I was looking at, it was the 10,000, 15. I thought, okay, the 25,000 was there.
It's still less than what I initially had budgeted. It wouldn't allow us to increase staff hours to the degree that 68,000 would have.
Uh huh. Thank you.
I'm Dooley.
I was going to ask you to break down the original 68,000 request because I was having trouble with the numbers also. So you're telling me that we should really ignore that particular number now.
Let's focus on
and
that. I think I don't have those numbers right with me, Dooley, about how I broke it out. But what it was looking at was bail was included in there for, I believe, 15,000. So, because we never included bail before, so if you take 68 and subtract
10,
it was included in here for 10,000.
Okay. I thought we had
it was 15 the previous year, it was 10 this year.
Okay, so, and I'm looking for your the breakdown further on that.
What page 40?
Thanks, Frank.
Well,
okay. 10,000 was for the bales. We're down to 58. A 40,000 of that was to increase staff hours to address increased caseload.
And that's from 35 to 37.5?
Yes. Well, it was from 35 to 37.5 for three of us, and it was from 21 to 28 for the operations manager. That was the lion's share of that, because if you're increasing someone a whole another full day from 0.6 to 0.8 FTEs. And then 26,000, that math doesn't look right, because a 2% wage increase isn't going to equal $26,000.
Okay.
So that math is wrong.
So this, I have a question which may be a Kevin question. Are the OTRs, I think you said this would be a new OTR.
The one I just asked for tonight,
yes.
The 25,000.
The OTRs don't have numbers this year. At least I didn't see them the way we used to talk about them, which in some ways made it easier to refer to them. So I'm not sure why Deb's new OTR request is actually new. It's a subset of her original one.
Well, it would actually be an amendment, because the recommended budget has it up by $25,000.
Right.
So I think what Deb is asking for is for an amendment to that budget to add another $25,000 via an amendment as opposed to a new OTR.
That's what I was thinking, but
okay.
I wasn't sure how it was going to be handled this year.
Okay. Right. It's not like it's the first time I've talked about it. I had talked about more money than this before, but I didn't know how you were handling it either. I think an amendment is probably the cleanest way.
Deb, may I ask, what are your plans for the new 25, if in fact you get that?
Thank you.
10,000 for the bail fund and 15,000 to increase staff hours, and not by 15,000 won't cover an increase for everyone from 35 to 37 and a half, and it won't cover a full increase from 21 to 28. So for the operations manager, so 15,000 just doesn't do that whole nut. So it'd be figuring out how many hours we can increase and where we need it most, and it would include a 2% COLA.
Any other questions?
So without a COLA, what number would be needed? Can you come back with that?
Yeah, I can just do it right off the top of my head pretty well. I think I should be able to. About a COLA would be about $4,200 less. So about $21,000.
Okay, thank you.
And any other questions? I was going to suggest, as I reminded you of the voting meetings, that what we're talking about here is obviously one of those things that would come as an amendment. If you so chose to do that.
Right.
Any other questions for Deb? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Real library.
Jim, can I ask a quick question before Deb goes away?
Yeah.
Deb, the folks are going to the jail to assign counsel applications, and they also do DSS applications.
Yes.
And I asked this in public safety. Assigned counsel, there's some kind of funding that comes from assigned counsel for that?
No. No, there's no funding.
We didn't increase somewhere when we took that into consideration a couple of years ago, I think.
It was, I think, I talked about the work we did for others, and so the county legislature gave us a little bit more money, I think, 4 years ago before the cuts started to address that assigned counsel piece. But we do not have a contract with assigned counsel.
Is there one with DSS for?
No, we do those applications, saving the county. Small amounts, in the magnitude of less than $25,000 in staff time, OAR doing those applications saves them traveling to the jail to do it as well.
Can you provide us with information on how many, on average, how many of those you do per year of each of those applications?
Of the assigned council, I know we do about just under 300 this year. I think it'll end up being. We're about 268. That's almost 100% of the assigned council applications.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of family court.
Mm-hmm.
I'm misspeaking, of criminal. Assigned council office does a lot of the family court. We don't do family
mm-hmm.
court.
And the DSS applications, do you know?
I don't know the percentage because I don't know what they do, but I know that we average, I think this year we've done almost like 225 DSS applications year to date. We report those out as service units each month to our board. I can go back and get those for you, Leslie, and give them to you.
That would be helpful. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Deb. Rural Libraries.
Not for Deb, I would like to ask Kathy Covert if she could possibly summarize the information from DSS in the expanded budget committee minutes. That would be great.
Hello. How are you?
Hello, I'm Tina Winstead. I'm the director of the Newfield Public Library.
Tina, would you please position that microphone so that...
closer?
Yeah, to you.
Yeah, well, we can't hear you in the mic.
Is this better?
Yeah, move right close. Move. That's good.
Okay. All right, I'm Tina Winstead. I'm the director of the Newfield Library. And this is Elaine Knapp. She comes from the business department at Finger Lakes. And we're going to sort of share the presentation like we usually do. First, I want to thank everyone. You guys do a lot of work. I know this is a big chore, and we appreciate all you do and your consideration of libraries especially. Libraries provide essential services with a very low price tag. We have trained and committed staff that maintain our services. Many of us, most of us, work at a much below competitive wage. We don't have health benefits or retirement. We're our Main Street buildings within walking distance of many of our patrons. And we know them by name, they know us, and we're a safe, approachable place that they can come for information. I personally believe that libraries are the cornerstone of a good democracy. Libraries are unique entities also in this county. We have services that aren't duplicated by others. We serve all people of all demographics. We align ourselves with a lot of the county missions as well. I wrote down a little list. We strengthen families and community. We enhance the quality of life. We protect individual freedom of expression and privacy. And we really encourage lifelong learning. How do we do this, you might ask? Story times. We give story times to the very young, the very old. We have job and test resources. We have programs that enrich and educate people of all ages. Some of us have homework support, language classes, free community spaces open to anyone in the community. And some of this is carried off with our interlibrary loans, which we rely on Finger Lakes services for. The way we manage all that we do is by building relationships in our community. Some of these collaborations are built on personal connections. We share resources with each other as libraries as well as other community agencies. We collaborate with schools. Some schools come to libraries for story times and programs. We also take programs to schools. Summer camps come to our summer reading programs. Daycare centers are delivered books and story times. Even seniors now, we deliver books to senior centers. Some people give story time at the senior centers. Homeschoolers use the library for programs, information, and we partner with town and county youth employment services to hire teens. We take that work very seriously as well. I feel personally that it's a matter of helping a young kid become a good employee in other aspects of life. Throughout all this, our increase in demand is pretty evident. This is one library's statistics. It is a 48% increase in library visits over the past 4 years and a 44% increase in circulation. Again, we have increases in attendance in programs and increase in use of computers. We sort of feel like this is one of those, if we build it, they will come. The more programs we have, the more people come. The more computer terminals we add to the libraries, the more signups we get. And it just continues to build. And on top of that, we've added another layer of services to what we offer. We have a new, the new technology has created a new audience for us in the digital content, for devices, for tutoring, for help with downloading. E-books, e-book demand has skyrocketed. We have a very difficult time keeping up with demands, particularly in the face of flat budgets. We don't have more money for more materials, and yet we have a huge demand for e-books. The computers is a unique service at the libraries. Computers are not a luxury anymore. People come to the library for high-speed internet, for free access to computers so that they can apply for jobs, unemployment insurance, and even get tax forms. And what this has done is really stressed our staff out. We now have added dimension. We need more training. And there's even more time expected while we're working, because people really need help. And so we have a lot of one-on-one work with people and their devices. We also offer classes. So it's an added element to what we do at the library. And with all these new service demands, we unfortunately have an increased cost to provide. We estimate our print materials have gone up about 10%, our audiovisuals about 8%. Libraries can take a dollar and stretch it into many. You've seen us do it year after year. That's one way we do it, is with Finger Lakes. So I'm going to let Elaine talk about what Finger Lakes does for us.
Well, for those of you who aren't familiar with the relationship between the rural libraries and the Finger Lakes library system, the system provides services to the member libraries that they would be beyond the reach for most libraries if they had to provide it for themselves. NYLA uses the number out there that for every dollar that you give to a library in New York State, you get back $13 worth of services. So we're providing an economy of scale and providing services to the libraries, and we do it in provide them with services that they would not be able to afford as well as they would through us. Things like IT support and the online library catalog, interlibrary loan, which my colleague mentioned, technical and cataloging services, reference databases, and a lot of collection materials, including the e-books that we've mentioned. What the Finger Lakes Library System uses the counting funding for is to help help offset the cost of delivery service to the Tompkins County's rural libraries. The interlibrary loan service enables patrons to place a hold on a title and receive the item in a couple of days, usually, from the system. That particular service makes what's normally a mortar and brick building become a mega library. A patron in Tompkins County's, a patron in Tompkins County then has access, really, to the collections and all the materials and resources of 33 libraries. So you can see the expansion in terms of access that being part of the system and participating in interlibrary loan gives to the libraries here in the county. In 2011, the Finger Lakes system delivered over 500,669 items to Tompkins County in 2011. Oh, thank you very much. Increased sharing because of the countywide library card, as well as the general increase in the use of all library services that we described previously. Interlibrary loan is seeing heavy use at this time when costs to provide the service is steadily rising. I'm sure that Kevin and Joe are well aware of the things that we're grappling with as well. The total overhead cost to provide delivery service for all five counties is about, we're going to exceed about $100,000 now for 2012. And I'm projecting that we're going to come somewhere close to about $125,000 probably for 2013. And the reason, part of the reason that we're going to be seeing that increase are rising fuel costs. We're having significant increases in state retirement costs, which I'm sure the county is experiencing, as well as all these other agencies. Other health overhead costs, such as health insurance and things like that. The recommended budget that that we're asking for, can you click ahead, is really basically restoring the levels back to where we were at 2011. We have taken some, have had decreases over the last 2 years from the county, and we do appreciate very much the funding that the county gives us. But the OTR that we're asking for here tonight is $3,050, which will basically bring us back to roughly where we were in 2011. This OTR is going to reflect, would result in an additional $550 per library and only an additional $300 over the original amount of money for the Finger Lakes Library System. And I apologize for my gravelly voice. I hope everybody understood me. So we came here tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions about the Finger Lakes Library System. And Tina would be very happy to talk about what we do for the rural libraries and the role of the county.
Peter, I have Peter, Mike, and Dooley. Go ahead.
Can I say quickly that I forgot to introduce the library directors that are here in the back row. Lansing, Susie Gutenberger, Dryden, Diane Pamel, and Trumansburg, Annette Birdsall. So they're also available for questions.
Go ahead, Peter.
Could you explain to me what e-books are and what I understand what a Kindle is. I know exactly what is that what you're talking about, or is it something different?
It is. You can just call it a download. Anything that you have to download across the internet. If it's something you read on any kind of a tablet or computer, it's an e-book.
Okay, so they have to have their own machine. They have to have their own tablet.
Well,
is that right? Or
that's the ideal, but in this trend, I think that we're in such a huge transition right now that I know I've gotten grant money to provide tablets, and we've had a tablet tasting, and the Teen Tech Club has provided instruction on downloading e-books on a variety of tablets. And that's a role we're filling that I don't think is going to hold up to the increased pumping out of new modules every year.
Okay.
Can I ask something?
Let me ask another question to finish it. So on a Kindle, if I want to read something new, I have to pay $9.99.
You can come to the library and get it for free.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We had to purchase those titles.
You have to purchase them, right. So you have a list like a catalog, same
Absolutely.
As books, right? And then you
Exactly.
can borrow that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if someone takes that out, you have to wait for you to put it back. Is that right?
We do.
Okay.
It is.
Thank you. That explains it.
Did you want to make a comment?
I just wanted to clarify that through the library system, you can download digital books
Okay.
and audiobooks, and that's where the cost is.
Yes, thank you. Okay, Mike.
Just one comment that even with the increase this year, which they've requested and has been recommended, we're still down $10,000 from where we were in 2010. Other departments are down too, but I wanted to just point that out. Wondering about Finger Lakes, what's funding looking like? What has it been from the state for your organization? Are there any words out there about what might be happening next year?
It's really kind of too soon to tell. I wish I could answer that question for you. We've obviously been seeing reductions from the state, very significant reductions to the state since Cuomo's administration. They did do a little restoration, about 3-4% of monies to us last year. The Assembly and the House did bring some funding back to the table for libraries. But we're starting to see that funding base shrink. It is affecting our operations, yes.
Thanks.
Julie.
I have the state question, too.
Okay. Pat, and then Pam.
Does this recommended budget, if you include the recommended ODR, meet the standard for maintenance of effort that's
yes,
required?
It would. Okay. Yes, it would.
Pam.
This is for Kevin. Kevin, I cannot possibly read this chart on their on this. And I guess I'm just requesting it. I don't know if other people are having problems with this. When any chart, any of these charts here, it's almost impossible to read the numbers on them. And this graph is, I can't read it. So I'm begging that we increase the size of the print here so that we can use these away from having them up on the screen, which, of course, is wonderful. Sorry, I just...
They're available on the website.
Thank you.
All of the PowerPoints are available an hour before the meeting on the website.
Well, I know, but some of us don't have access to the website an hour before the meeting, and so I just think in general, I feel as if we should be able to read these charts on a piece of paper that's sitting in front of us. I mean, if the county wants to provide us with electronic devices so that we can sit and look at this, that would be just fine with me. But under the circumstances, it seems to me that I should be able to read these on my own.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you all for coming. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
I do have a question.
Don't go.
Frank. A bunch of us, as you know, over the years have been real involved with the libraries, rural Finger Lakes library system and whatnot. One of the efforts that we put forward a number of years ago was to have a library presence in each township. And that precipitated creating the Danby and Caroline facility. We helped get Lansing started. The one town, and the town of Ithaca, we never really pursued it because TCPL is downtown. Enfield still does not have a library presence. And the two town supervisors that I dealt with both were interested in doing it. They even put aside space out there to have it. Do you or does anyone of the other library directors, do you have any inkling as to whether there's any will to start even a something similar to Caroline and Danby even?
Reading centers.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what, when we lost the bookmobile 100 years ago, that's what precipitated starting those two.
Right, and I think those are wonderful efforts. And because Chermansburg borders Enfield as well as Ithaca, I'd certainly love to have that conversation and explore reading centers because we want everyone to be served, and underserved populations are something that all libraries are concerned with. But the unique thing about Tompkins County is that we are already unique in the state in that we have overlapping chartered service area where Tompkins County is also, our patrons also go to Ithaca. We also, you know, it's a fluid movement. And so I think that if we have these conversations, we all have to be having them together so that we're moving forward. But absolutely, we're always interested in making sure that everyone has library service.
Thank you, Annette. Last evening, I received, all of us received a bumper sticker and said, "So how are the children?" And I think all of you are helping with that. Helping the children all over the county. Tommy, thank you so much for this. Good enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, S&W Conservation District. Soil and water.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Oh, great.
Okay, the first slide is the recommended budget from the county administrator's office. In that additional, there are two OTRs that were recommended that we will get to very soon. Effects in the 2013 budget that create a difference. As you just heard from some of the others that were up here, there's increasing, rising overhead and fixed costs that include our insurances. Soil and Water has to purchase all of its insurance, from health insurance to insurance for its vehicles, liability for our board members, the whole gamut of insurance. Of course, fuel prices, we all know what they're doing. And one is an aging vehicle problem that we really need to replace somehow. We've got a 2002 minivan that has somewhere around 120,000 miles on it. We really haven't had any use of it since about June because the parts are really too expensive to put into that vehicle, and they haven't been able to locate any used parts, so it sits. And with that, our staff has to use their own vehicles quite often, which we have to pay mileage, so we really are racking up some pretty big numbers on mileage as well. Okay, so the two OTRs. The first one would be for a 2% wage increase for the staff. We're coming up on 3 years that we've had no increases in our wages. So, I know it's the same story you're hearing from many others, but it's going to get to the... It has been a problem in the past, and it's going to get to be a bigger problem that we're going to continue to lose really good staff people who are well-trained, specialized in certain aspects of work that only with the credentials they have can some of this work be completed. The other one was just 2% operating expenses, maintenance of effort type thing. The third one we had asked, I had put in, was for the work that we do with hydrilla. The district, I think you all know, has been very active in the hydrilla work. I like to call it the behemoth. And our roles have included permitting. We had to submit 9 different permits this year. We had to do notifications for herbicide applications 4 times to, it's approximately 215 people. Letters go out, but with those letters, there has to be other documents proving, you know, that we can show DEC that we sent out the labels. That's part of the permit requirement, that copies of all the herbicide labels and all that go out. So it's not a 47-cent envelope every time. It's a lot more. Well, we've headed up the water quality monitoring, keeping track of that, getting shipping samples weekly to the lab, overnight shipping. We've done grant writing and are administering some of the grants in our office for the hydrilla. We've done the contracting with the certified applicators. And, of course, we're heavily involved in many meetings with the contractors, the task force, public meetings, all those kinds of things. So we have racked up a lot of time. Well, let me go back to that one just for a minute. The one good thing I can say is at the time when I was putting this together, we didn't know for sure if any of the state or federal money we were going to be able to use for staff time. Since, just in the last couple of days, I have found out that in next year's federal money, there'll be about $20,000 for us in staff time. And there'll be $10,000, maybe $15,000 the outset. Well, that's the federal money. The other one is the state, the $20,000, the $775,000. There's a signed contract for that, so we know the budget is set now. Okay, so then I just thought I'd throw up a few of the things that the soil and water does for the county that really helps to save money. We received a grant from DEC to purchase a new hydroseeder and to purchase hydroseeding materials. When County Highway heard that we were going to be turning off our old hydroseeder, they asked if they could buy it. And I said, certainly. And really all I wanted out of it was enough to pay the 25% match of the new hydroseeder. So I offered it to them for $10,000. In looking on the internet, I'm sure the value of that was anywhere between $15,000 and $20,000 for that model in the condition it was in. Also in that, we did provide the county highway with about $8,300 of hydroseeding materials that, again, I'm able to pay for out of our grant. So I have supplied that to them. We also work with the county highway on several projects to protect the bridges, other infrastructure, by assisting with surveys. Oftentimes with our equipment, we do the surveys. We can do the designs in our office. We do most of the permitting. We've paid for rock for some of these projects for County Highway. And we've actually done project oversight. Also have responsibility for the flood hazard mitigation projects. And on this, I will tell you that the $70,000 you appropriated to just recently is kind of a carryover for the town of Caroline and the project out on Six Mile Creek. That project is done. That structure is completed. Really, all we have left out there now is a little hydroseeding that will probably get done tomorrow. That project will be 100% complete. So we really thank the legislature for stepping up and filling in that need. Hopefully FEMA will come back and the county will get their money. Other roles. Our office now serves as the county stormwater office for the Stormwater Coalition with a coordinator, one of my staff people. She has taken over all responsibility for writing the annual reports to DEC as a group for all the MS4s. We also do grant administration for that group. She does trainings that have to be done by a certified professional in erosion sediment control. Nobody else can do those. She's also done stormwater pollution. She does stormwater pollution prevention plan reviews by request, and she does inspections for some of the towns. So, pretty major stuff with the stormwater program. And I didn't even put anything up here about all the ag projects and ag work that we do. We continue to do a lot of those projects and implement them. So I think that's about it.
All right. Brian, you had your hand up?
I did. So basically you're saying that your last OTR request that was not recommended by administration, you basically don't even need it now?
We certainly don't need it all. We're still going to be a little short, I think.
Yeah, about five.
5 to 10, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Craig, and then I have a question, and then Peter. With all the OTRs, will you then have a balanced budget?
We'll be closer. It is a problem. I actually have a meeting Friday with Chesky, Dieter, Shagan, those people. We're going to talk about that. They have been up and did another review. It's going to take a little time to get everything back in balance, but I think we're on the right track now.
Peter.
Two questions. One, what are you going to do about the minivan? And the second, what exactly is hydroseeding?
I'll start with the hydrazine. You know when they clean the ditches and then you see that green sprayed on them? Well, that's the green is the mulch, but mixed in there in a solution with water and it's sprayed on is seed and whatever else you may want to put on there. But that fits for erosion control and for getting vegetation back on those clean ditches very soon.
We're doing that in place of putting the shoulders, the green shoulders.
You could hardly see the shoulders. Huh? That's a nice spread the short. And the minivan.
That's something the board, my board, is still working on.
Okay.
Mike, go ahead.
Craig, are you now affiliated with the Health Insurance Coalition of the or consortium?
We can join that.
Have
January.
You joined it yet or not?
Pardon?
Are you a part of it yet or not?
We aren't a part of it. The bill was passed and signed at the last state legislative session. I think Joe and when I met with Joe, they said the first of the year we could get in.
Will that? I noticed you had insurances as one of the drivers for the cost of that. Will that help in that area?
Definitely. Our health insurance this year is over $60,000. I think with the numbers that Joe shared with me, we thought we could probably get in around $40,000 for the year. That'll help the budget.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Craig, on the because we've been Pat and I are on the district board of directors as the county representatives to Craig's board. One of the things that we've been working on, and Jim began to ask the question about the status of the of soil and water's budget, and just to elaborate a little bit so that you guys aren't in the dark, we've been working with Chosky Dietersagen through Joe's office to have them take the budget apart and then literally see where we have to put it back together for cash flow reasons. Excuse me. One of the items that we've been working on, or Craig's been working on, are the status of the grants. A number of the grants, Craig brings in several million dollars to the county every year in grant funding that gets redistributed into the community through agriculture, through farms, through some of the programs that Soil and Water oversees, flood hazard mitigation and whatnot. The paperwork needs to be resubmitted to Ag and Markets or DEC or whoever the grant comes from. And that's the paperwork that Craig is putting together with help to get those pieces back together. Those things are in process. One of the pieces of confusion is that often there are other counties that participate in the grants. In this case, there are two, if I remember right, that are with Cayuga County, and we're waiting for paperwork to come back from them so that they can meld them into the presentation to Ag and Markets and the DEC. Whatever the outcome is with the meeting with Joe and Craig and Chosky Dietersagen, we'll probably hear about it at the board meeting. long diatribes, but bear with me. Fundraising and cash flow revenue has been a concern because the farm bill wasn't approved. Well, let's say it wasn't approved. It wasn't approved or renewed. A number of the programs that come through Craig's office, Soil and Water Conservation, and also Patrick Barry's office, and RCS, and the USDA, ended on September 30th. They're no longer available, and they could have been a source of new funding for some of the things Craig's office is doing. That source of revenue, we hope, is just on hold, but right now it doesn't exist because the farm bill didn't go through. One of the other things that we've been after is, particularly with this hydrilla money, and I'm glad Brian brought it up, one of the shortfalls with this office has been they've been fronting a lot of the work The county came across with $27,000 last year to help fund some of the work that had to be done. But in this year alone, they're $40,000 behind with all the services, all the time, all the permits. You saw the list up there. Even if they get the money restored the way Craig described it for next year, that won't really offset all of what Soil and Water has already spent. It won't replenish the coffers because they have to do more applications on the inlet and on wherever else you have to apply. I think there were two applications this year of the weed killer for hydrilla, basically. The DEC has been really slow in replenishing the coffers. The Environmental Trust Fund was supposed to be tapped with some money. The state is dragging. You heard it all from the human service agencies, believe me. Soil and Water is getting blitzed the same way. The cash flow coming back from the state, and in some cases from the feds, is not very robust. Pat and I asked, we went to, of all places, the tourism board to ask for some funding because tourists, anything that we can do to keep that inlet clean and keep this stuff out of the lake, I mean, the tourists do provide a certain amount of, we draw money from that group through room tax, and we thought that it might be appropriate for them to help fund some of the hydrilla work because who's that going to help? And we asked Craig to go meet with Tom Knipe and Fred Bond, who you folks know. Long thing. I just wanted to ask out loud, what's the status of that source of funding?
We met with Fred last week, and what he told us was the money they have has to somehow inspire people from out of the county to come into the county. It can't be used for any staff time. It has to be matched dollar for dollar, cash, any money from there. Roxy Johnson and I pretty much walked out of there just kind of shaking our heads that there really isn't anything there that we can tap into.
Okay, well, at any rate, just so you know that anticipating the meeting that Joe and Craig are going to have with Chosky Dietersagen, it's probably, and I'm glad Jim asked the question about the budget.
I have one more when you're done.
All right. This is going to be a work in progress here for a couple of weeks anyway, until we can come back, because we have some information on the van, and there's an option that we might be able to pursue. And we'll probably talk about that at Monday's meeting.
Anyone else around the room? My only question was, Frank, are you 0.5 with these guys?
You mean FTE?
Yeah, you gave a nice presentation.
Well, you know, the $104,000, one of the questions Pat and I asked, the $104,000, forget the rent, that's another 35 or 36 grand. That is not part of the $104,000, the base target money. Pat and I asked that they break that Teresa, who's the secretary, break it down so that we could have an idea around this table of what Soil and Water does for the $104,000, because it is a substantial amount of money. We ought to have, Teresa's almost got it finished. We'll make sure that gets around to you guys, because we want to make sure that, like this hydrilla thing, that's an expense on top of everything else, and it's a devastating amount of money. To apply that stuff to the inlet, what was it, a couple of $100,000?
We've already spent over $300,000 this year of the $380,000. We're getting down the bottom of the barrel of that.
I mean, it doesn't come cheap to preserve the inlet. And if Soil and Water wasn't there to help out, and Roxy, the city funded Roxy Johnson almost 100%, thank God for the city, to help out with this project. If they hadn't stepped up to do this, the inlet would be plugged with this weed, and you could kiss all the tourists goodbye, because nobody's going to launch a boat.
You're 0.75 now. Is there anyone else have any questions for either one of these guys?
Or
go ahead, Dooley.
Pat, you got to be on the diet.
Craig, in previous years, you have usually provided some background information about how other counties fund their districts. Mm-hmm. And our level of funding. Do you have any of that available this year?
Oh, yeah.
You want to share some of that information?
At this point, or would you like him to
get it? Or would you like it written?
Well, I didn't know whether you had it with him.
I don't have that paperwork with me right now.
Yes, I think it would be good.
I did share it with my board, and I think I sent it to Joe. Remember, because you asked me how much of Cugas was connected with their wheat harvesting.
Right.
Yeah, and I did get that number.
So, yes, please provide.
I'm going to make a bold promise. I think he will do that.
I would like just to make another comment, too, about the state funding. I closed a grant back in March or April, submitted the voucher for the final payment of $43,750, all of which we had already spent because you had to spend it to get reimbursed. We just got reimbursed about a month ago for that. Right now we have 4 closed projects and we're waiting it. So we have vouchers in for over $300,000.
Waiting. Congratulations, you got reimbursed.
Yeah, I know. It makes you wonder sometimes, doesn't it, if you ever will? I agree. It's frustrating.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Craig. Workforce Investment Board. You want to negotiate with us for that? Sorry.
No breaks going on today?
No.
Human service. Human services.
This is the Maddock and Braddock moment.
Yes, this is the Maddock and Braddock show. It's a requirement for hiring that your name rhyme. We actually have an employee at the One Stop Center that's Shattuck. So we have Maddock, Braddock, and Shattuck at the One Stop Center.
Could you move lawyers? Good. Thank you.
I'm Julie Maddock. I am the director of the Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board. And I'm going to start out today just by talking a little bit about the board. In terms of our budget request, we are requesting in 2013, $532,000 is our expenditures. Our revenues are $461,824. Our local request is for $70,281. FTEs of the board is 1.85. It's myself and an administrative coordinator that are the board staff. And we have no over-target request.
Done.
That's it. Diane.
The second portion of this is the Workforce One-Stop Career Center. A majority of our funding is federal funding, and we're bringing forward a budget reflecting a sustaining level. We're strategically still providing what we deem as essential services and then working harder with local partner programs, with grants, with streamlining some of our paperwork processes, and then relying more heavily on the use of technology. Okay. Full-time equivalents, we're staying the same. We're maintaining the and more carefully aligning staff with some of the priorities, both at the state and federal level. We have no over-target requests.
So just to take a few minutes of your time, I know you're behind, so we'll be quick, but to take a few minutes of your time, our program year is July through June each year, so between July 2011 and June 2012, we served 2,696 customers through Tompkins Workforce New York. We provide those services with a variety of different entities at the One Stop Center. We have local county staff. We have State Department of Labor staff. We have vocational rehab staff, older worker programs. We have staff from BOCES. So those services are provided with a variety of different agencies under one roof. Diane is the county's director of employment and training and runs one of the programs in the One Stop Center, as well as is the center manager. And so she is loosely coordinating all those entities to provide the services to the almost 2,700 people. I'm just going to go quickly into and talk a little bit about the unemployment rate. All of you, I think, know that Martha Armstrong and I have been talking over the last couple of years, or over the last 6 to 9 months, about issues related to the unemployment rate in Tompkins County. Martha and I have been looking at alternative ways to measure the rate of what we would call labor utilization, and we have found a couple of resources, a couple of data points out there that allow us to better measure what's actually going on in our community. When you hear an unemployment rate in 2012 of 6.4%, that equals about 3,600 people that are termed unemployed in Tompkins County. When you actually look, when you look and pull apart the numbers a little bit, figures actually are a little closer to a full 75% of that, further of that. And so it's actually more like about 6,400 people that are either unemployed, discouraged from working and not looking for work, or working part-time, not to their full capacity. And so there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And when we look at our community figures, we're talking about 6,400 people that are actually not working to their full potential and to the extent that they want to be.
And then from the One Stop Center perspective, the job uncertainty and instability definitely is continuing. We are really still facing a lot of challenging times. The demand is at record levels, as they have been the last 2 years. We're serving customers more often and for longer right now. So in addition to our steady numbers pretty much across the board, we went from a touch point of 2.3 times now to 5.7 times, and that's on average. There's some that come in monthly for a long period of time than that. We're averaging about 400 customers using the resource room. These are called self-service. It's very similar to the library system, as people come in to use the computers, phone, fax, and staff assistance. We
is
have
that
100.
A day?
I'm sorry?
400 people in what?
No, not a day.
What are you talking about?
No, over the year.
A year.
Yeah,
thank
over
you.
A year period of time. We're averaging about 120 youth served annually by the youth program, and the youth are being served in an intensive case management, and primarily those are low-income youth with barriers. We have 131 customers in training. Most of those are skill gap trainings for computer and vocational. And we've served 42 people with our TAA or Trade Act funds, primarily fallout from Emerson and BorgWarner, mainly. New York State has recently released the $6.4 million for on-the-job training. We're actively pursuing that. We have a number of different businesses as well as job seekers interested in that match, and that's rolling pretty quickly at this point. We wanted to give you just a heads up on Ithaco. United Technologies Corporation recently announced that they provided a WARN notice for their employees. They are closing. We met when they let us know. We met with their HR within a week. We met with all of their employees within 2 weeks. 79 employees are receiving notice right prior to Thanksgiving. Our focus with them has been solely on employment and re-engaging into the employment system. We've provided them assistance with job search, with identifying resources in the community, with training options already, particularly since it's November. Many of them can start up with classes if that's what they want to do in January. We've been outreaching to businesses to get them connected with businesses that are still searching for those same skill sets. We're doing workshops on a regular basis there now and also asking them to come to us so that transition's a little easier. We also did a rapid response session with all of the employees and talked about healthcare, unemployment, financial survival during unemployment, and are coordinating a job fair in November for that group. Just wanted to give you that heads up. Just that's one of a few of official closings for this year. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the influences on our budget. When we are working on our county budget for 2013, generally we're estimating how much funding, federal revenue we will see as of July of 2013. So it's estimates that we're making a full year ahead of time based on current knowledge that we have. So those estimates are based upon what we know about today, but I will say that there's more uncertainty than ever. Given that we are heavily dependent on federal funding, we are subject to sequestration January 3rd of 2013. There is a potential that we will see a substantial cut, and the minimum estimates that I've seen right now for how much we would directly receive in cuts is about $53,000. We have our fingers crossed at this point as it relates to federal funding. That's the minimum at this point that we're hearing about what cuts we would directly see. I will say that the other agency that is the largest funder of the One Stop Center, the Department of Labor, is also subject to about $3.1 million statewide in cuts in their funding as well as other agencies within the One Stop Center that receive federal funding, and there's an expectation they'll see cuts as well. If sequestration goes through as exactly as was in the law. So we are looking at more uncertainty than we've seen in quite some time. Other major influences on our budget are unemployment. At any given time, if unemployment, suddenly we see a downturn and unemployment goes up, that's also a major influence on our budget. Diane?
Sorry. With the unemployment piece, we just wanted to note that this year, because of the long-term unemployment, we've had to really look at how we're providing services and switch things up a bit. We've had to do a lot more employer recruitment. We have become more active with SHRM, which is the Society for Human Resource Management, basically 90 job search hiring managers, and so in a meeting with them on a monthly basis. We're doing an increase in job postings so that people have more jobs and options for that. We're tapping into a lot of the job boards that are out there and making it electronic and really tapping into the technology that works. We're also looking at what is often termed as job skills measures. A lot of employers are coming to us and saying there's a lot of people that are unemployed and yet there's a lot of jobs and we're not finding employees. How can we better match these? We've been working pretty consistently in doing job screenings where we pre-screen a lot of our applicants and send those candidates to our businesses. We've also developed a national worker readiness credential and are working with many of our younger youth and our returning veterans to do job matching and looking at skill sets. We've invested some of our federal dollars into an e-learning program so that people can do e-learning both at the center and as well as any other place that they have high internet access. And we're also tapping a lot more into the TC3 classes for the adult eds. We also have a program called Veterans First, where we are providing high-class service for our veterans. We've expanded our workshop repertoire and are doing a lot more different kinds of workshops in a longer term and a lot more networking opportunities for people.
And then lastly, one of the major influences is on both us and our budget is federal legislative changes. The Congress has been talking about reauthorization of the Workforce Investment Act since 2003. We tend to not respond too quickly when we see potential bills out there. We did in 2003 and 4 and 5 and maybe even 6. At this point, we tend to not respond as quickly. In analysis of the potential bills, but there are that is always a possibility that we'll see major federal workforce development legislative changes in the next congressional session.
And then lastly, we're continuing to access additional funding and the resources that some of our partner agencies are having. We have the recent NEG OJT, which is the National Emergency Grant for on-the-job training. On-the-job training is a program that allows an employer to hire somebody that they're interested in and receive some subsidy in order to be able to do that and pay for a training portion of their first portions of employment. The TAA continues the Trade Act assistance for about 40 or 42 individuals, and then we have a pretty active educational resources grant right now that we're working on. We're going to continue to be active in looking at funding sources whenever possible and partnering with collaborators in the local area.
And then lastly, the Workforce Investment Board and the state and federal government have performance measures and data points that we track related to return on investment. Of the unemployed customers that we placed and retained last year in employment, the average earnings for all programs was, as you can see here, $29.5, which when we look at all the customers that have been placed, it's about $27.8 million total in wages, earnings for individuals that have been served through the through Tompkins Workforce New York.
Questions. Will and Peter.
A while back, there was a whole discussion that the unemployment numbers for the county seemed to be kind of out of sync with what you guys were experiencing directly. What I was hearing you say just now was that actually the number you have doesn't truly reflect the reality of a number of people that have dropped out. So, but that's probably always been true. There's probably
it's always been true. Yeah. We're just looking a lot closer at other data points other than the unemployment rate because we believe that that rate is seriously skewed data.
Okay.
And so we're looking at other measures of labor utilization or underutilization and other data points, and it points to a lot more folks that are. Interested, capable, and skilled to be in the workforce and that need assistance in moving out into the workforce.
So I'm still a little confused because what we were hearing from Martha was that it seemed like the number, the official number was much higher than your experience mm-hmm. locally, but you're mm-hmm. saying that, in fact...
Well, let me say that you're correct about the unemployment yeah. rate. The unemployment rate has been, over the last year, has been much higher than we believe it is. However, the unemployment rate as a measure of what's actually going on in the economy has never been a good measure of what's actually going on. The unemployment rate only measures people who are actively seeking work
right.
and only ever did. We're now looking at much better methods of measuring what's going on, and that includes people who are actively looking for work, people that are discouraged from working,
mm-hmm.
as well as people that are working part-time that would very much like to be working full-time.
And that all makes sense. I guess what I'm trying to get a picture of is what relative to where we are we stable, getting worse, getting better? You know,
We're stable. We're still pretty stable. And in terms of what we saw this year, you saw data on we served 2,696 customers from July to June. The prior year, we served about 2,500.
Okay.
So the numbers are very close.
And finally, you may not be able to answer this, but should sequestration happen, what do you have contingency plans? What Have you not even contemplated this?
Right now we're in the heavily lobbying stage.
Advocacy
and lobbying. We actually have hope October 26th for a second meeting with Congressman Hanna. So we have a pretty active lobbying effort and educating effort of the congressman. But in terms of those cuts, what we'll need to look at is staffing, operations, and training, everything. We'll need to look at everything at that point. At this point, there is no room in our budget for cuts, so we would have to be looking at all three areas and potentially coming to this group and others for additional funding.
Thank you.
Peter.
Yeah. While you were talking, I was doing what I like to do, namely look at numbers and say, what do those things say?
And then please use your microphone. That's what I like.
Okay, well, that was all right. You didn't have to hear that anyway. It wasn't a question. But unless I'm wrong, I found your numbers quite remarkable. We got 100,000 people in Tompkins County, and there's a whole bunch of people who aren't looking for work, like retired people and children, and we got at least 25,000 students, college-age students in this area who aren't looking for work. So, you know, that number starts to be closer to, instead of 100,000, 50,000, 60,000. You take the unemployment rate and multiply that by 50,000, you get 3,000, and you see, what was it, 3,000 people a year. And so if I really believe all those numbers, I see that you're serving everybody who's unemployed. I mean, that's my conclusion by those numbers. And then when you tell me that you place 1,000 people, then I'm concluding that you actually cut the unemployment rate somehow by 30%. I mean, that's 30% of the people who are unemployed. I don't know if any of that's true or not, but that's what I was thinking going through. I was quite impressed at the success rate given those numbers. So, right? Okay.
Yeah. I think you should forward that to them, Peter. They might be able to use that.
You follow what I was saying, right?
Most of it. Let me give you just a couple of quick caveats. When you look at, first off, let me say that individuals that are receiving unemployment are required to come to Tompkins Workforce New York.
Uh-huh.
So we do see a significant portion of the number of people that are receiving unemployment because they are required to come to us. We also are, when it comes to programs for people that are unemployed, county residency is not a requirement and cannot be a requirement based upon the federal legislation. And so in those numbers of 2,696 people, there may be individuals that are from outside of Tompkins County.
Sneaky people from Tioga County and stuff.
Tioga, Cortland. We do see people from Schuyler.
Okay.
About half of the people in Ithaco drive in are non-county residents.
Okay. I mean, but in any case, it's quite impressive, I think. I mean, it seems like very large numbers given the size of our operation.
Most days at 4:30, it feels like that.
I heard a number a couple of years ago before, you know, bad times hit, that 15,000 people drove into the county every day to work. And that was a planning study and some other things. Leslie, go ahead.
I'm going to do what I do best, a quarter of nine when I haven't had dinner, Peter, and get completely confused by your math, but I love it.
It's so Diane. Probably wrong.
Diane, I want to look at the training aspect of your training services
And I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. Is included in this training section 4400? I think that's where I am. Is the training services include continuous civil service prep? Or you just do that occasionally or not at all?
Yeah, we have. We've done two initiatives. One with the WDIC and then one with the library system. Mm-hmm. Is we did two services where we had workshops and we did civil service applications, recruitment, how you apply, what kinds of jobs, how do you match your skills, and so on. And then one specifically about the math and finding and determining the scopes of what to study and then how to study. And then we actually did some study sessions.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember if those study sessions were related to jobs that were available at that point and people were interested
in? Yeah, I think what we did is we looked 6 months back and 6 months ahead and say what were the civil service exams that were happening, mm-hmm. what were the recruitments that were just finishing up, and what are exams that were anticipated. So mm-hmm. absolutely. Whether it was actual jobs or whether it was creating the civil service lists, mm-hmm. and so on, I'm not sure.
And I have a couple of follow-up questions. And who does the recruitment for people for, like, those prep sessions?
We've worked with a couple different organizations.
And the organizations
yep.
do.
Yep.
Funding for education training, for education. Can you say more what that means?
Funding for education?
Uh-huh.
We have what's called Workforce Investment Act funds that are mm-hmm. for youth and then adult and dislocated workers, and there's some eligibility requirements for those. Mm-hmm. If anybody is interested in training, we have them come to the center or we visit with them, determine eligibility, talk with them about labor market, what kinds of jobs that are out there, and then match them with an eligible training provider list so that individuals choose the training, what level of training, when it starts, and so on, and then we pay up to $3,000 per individual for this training.
So this is not the kind of thing, like if I am interested in quitting this legislature job and becoming a woodworker, that you would pay like tuition for me to attend TC3 to get woodworker?
We potentially could if we found that locally or within a reasonable driving distance mm-hmm. there are woodworking jobs. We want to make sure that we're advising and helping people really get real training for real jobs. So if that was a viable mm-hmm. Career path for you and you had aptitude or we determined with you that that was a good career step, we mm-hmm. would definitely have that conversation.
I'll be working on my own. I'm not working for anybody else. And
okay.
that is up to $3,000?
Yep, per person.
Let me also say that one mm-hmm. of the other options is for us to fund an individual to be trained on the job instead mm-hmm. of in a classroom training situation. And Diane mentioned that we are increasing our on-the-job training efforts. That is where we work with an employer, put together a contract, a training outline, that we are contracting with the employer to train them in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
Employers, in those cases, are hiring individuals who do not have the skill sets that they would normally be looking for,
mm-hmm.
and they agree to hire that individual. We particularly like on-the-job training as a model because they're already employed, and we know we will be successful in that individual getting employment at the end of the training.
But I think you also mentioned that if you were going to do a business of your own, we would want to make sure that you had small business or entrepreneurship training, and that's a really good match for somebody who wants to do that. So we have partnerships with AFCU and Computing Center and other kinds of services so that you have a business plan and you have support for that business plan if you were interested in launching out on your own.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Peter Newground.
New, right, not even a question, it's a statement.
Well,
say
you know.
It anyway, I right at the end, okay. I just want to draw, I don't know how many of you saw the opinion piece in today's Ithaca Journal.
Yep.
There was a particularly obnoxious piece about the kind of work that you people do, which is that you never find anybody a job. All you're interested in doing is get them on food stamps. And, I
I would suggest that you publish an opinion piece describing some of the numbers that you've given us for the Ithaca Journal and telling them exactly what you do. I think it would be a good, I think it would be very worthwhile.
Don't you?
Publish Peter's numbers.
Yes. It was very disappointing and disheartening.
But it should be answered. I think you're the right people to answer it.
Anything else? Thank you very much. We have facilities. Aurel Romero is here, and I just want to preface this presentation with Aurel. It needs to be on an airplane at 5:30 a.m. So, you know, take that information and figure out what you ought to do.
Well, not for pleasure.
I understand. And you know, I was not going to invade your privacy. I just know that you're leaving at 5:30.
Yes. Aurel, I'm glad to see you.
Yes, it's good to be here.
It's nice to see you.
This was not part of my therapy treatment, but it wasn't Joe that asked me to attend. I wanted it to actually
you miss
be
us.
Here.
You miss us.
I do. And my budget is not controversial. There are no over-target requests. So I knew that it wouldn't be that stressful. The doctor wants me to keep stress at a minimum. So I appreciate you staying as late as you are. And Kevin scheduled me for this meeting because the previous ones didn't work because of surgeries. So I'll just get started. The 2013 recommended budget is slightly higher than last year's. Most of the increases are either attributable to increase in fringe benefits by what was negotiated in labor contracts, but also there's probably, let's see, $85,000 roughly in additional funding for maintenance repairs. Some of that is for improvements in security throughout many of our county buildings as a result of an assessment that was done within the last 2 years. Let's see, moving forward. The difference in revenues between 2012 and 2013. 2012, we had the administrative coordinator, Cheryl Nelson, and so some of that funding was reimbursed to our division by the other public works divisions, since in next year we won't be using or won't have that position, that revenue is no longer necessary. This is a chart that I show year in, year out, and when I don't, people ask me about it. So this just shows over probably since 1999 comparison of over comparing the total building square footage maintained, which is the I guess turquoise graph. We're currently maintaining 432,000 square feet, which includes most recently the Human Services Annex building. Back in 1999, it was about 338,000. The other one that I think is important to note is the bottom one, the yellow one. Currently, as far as staff, each maintenance staff person is responsible for, on average, maintaining about 61,000 square feet, as compared to 1999, about 33,000, so almost half that. So we've taken on more buildings, but not increased staff. So we've basically been more efficient, but it comes a point where in the near future, if we keep adding buildings, we will have to increase staff. And then the center graph is basically the maintenance, the money that we spend in maintenance. It's just materials costs, not labor. And so this year it's going up to $235,000 as compared to last year at $150,000. This is another one that just compares our cleaning analysis. We clean about 338,000 square feet, which is an average of about $20,400 per cleaner as compared to 2,000 to 14,000 square feet per cleaner. So we have not added cleaning staff in many years since we've added new buildings. Full-time equivalents is a slight increase from last year, 0.1. One staff person has gone to half-time, and then we've added one additional seasonal position over the summer. But otherwise, we have not really had any significant changes in staffing.
Questions? Will.
Carol, I was curious that graph chart you showed that I guess it was the fourth slide. Yep. What I'm curious about the reddish thing that sort of goes up and down. What causes that?
Blood pressure.
Oh, that's the maintenance cost. What we spend in maintenance, mostly for materials.
The materials costs really dropped that precipitously?
Well, no. Well, I can explain. The reason in the 2006 to 2010 it was higher is because we had included a lot of the deferred maintenance funding in our operating budget, and since then it's been pulled out. So about $400,000 removed from there, which would basically level off that graph. But back then it was part of our operating budget.
So currently it's a different accounting.
Exactly.
Procedure. I see. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Did you say it's in a different place?
Yes, it's not part of our operating budget. It's part of capital.
Of the capital, right.
I have Peter and Frank.
I really like your graphs, Earl, didn't I?
Hello? Hello?
Excuse me?
I said I really like
Peter,
your graphs.
Peter, could you use the mic, please?
Sorry. I really liked your graphs, didn't I?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's lovely. I think it's very cool. Go ahead. Frank,
in recovery with Earl.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Aren't you glad
it
you
really
showed
is? Earl, over the years we spent the money to upgrade the buildings for energy conservation.
Yes.
Can you I don't want to put you through a lot, but I mean, can you just say how effective that's been? And
yes, I mean, the energy projects we did back in 2005, 2006, so it's been about seven years, were effective in reducing our utility costs, keeping them fairly stable. But also in those projects, we took the opportunity to replace boilers, air handling units, do roof replacements, all of which affect our energy use. So we were able to roll those projects in as energy performance projects rather than put them as capital projects that would have shown up as capital projects if we had not done them through this performance contract. So you see that in our utility costs. Our utility costs have been pretty stable.
Pretty stable.
We're still paying off the debt, I think, about $280,000 a year, and I think we've got another 4 or 5 years to go. And once we pay it off, then that money is, you'll see it as direct savings, $281,000 that can be used elsewhere in the general fund.
Thank you. I have Leslin and then Mike.
Harold, with so many more square footage added and not staff, could you speak to the quality of what's going on with cleaning?
On the cleaning side?
On the cleaning side, and just also on our workers.
It's getting to a point where it's the kind of the tipping point, especially mm-hmm. now with the Human Services Annex building. Mm-hmm. Cleaning supervisor asked me once we purchased the building, and we're moving forward with renovating it, if we were hiring staff to clean that. Mm-hmm. And I indicated no, not at this time. Due to budgets and such, it was probably not a good year mm-hmm. to request additional staffing. So what we're having to do is basically either increasing a couple hours of staff or looking at the work that we do and mm-hmm. prioritizing really what should be done mm-hmm. and what we probably can't do as often. So adjusting the frequency of some of the cleaning tasks that we do.
Okay, I have two other quick questions. Ideally, what would the cleaning staff look like for the amount of square footage that we take care of?
Well, the far lower left circle, that's industry average is about 14 to 16,000. So we're up to about 20,500. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking about 2 to 3 more cleaning staff.
2 to 3 more staff. And my last question, I should know this. Our staff cleans this facility?
Yes.
Thank you. As in the entire courthouse?
Yes.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Arell, I didn't see any over targets. I thank you, but my what I'm wondering about is I'm sure we have deferred maintenance, things that we should be doing here. Are we just going to try to muddle along? Are we going to think of a capital project? What's in your thinking?
Well, some of the projects we've done in past years have helped with some of the deferred maintenance, some of the renovations we've done. The project that we're doing in the old courthouse gives us an opportunity to make some improvements in the space as well. We do have a separate capital project to address deferred maintenance. As I indicated initially in the comparing this year's budget against last year's budget, I indicated that we put some more money in building repairs and maintenance. So we put in more money to look at on the operating side, dealing with replacement of motors, units, and things of that sort that we can handle under our operating budget that aren't large enough for a capital project. A capital project for deferred maintenance is looking at roof replacements, boiler replacements, flooring replacements, those things. But I think at this point we're okay. So I think I can tell you this point, I think I feel comfortable with this budget. I think we have enough to do the work with existing staff.
Thank you.
Hi, Brian.
Just one comment. Thanks, obviously to know OTRs so that you don't have to come back to worry about those. And I would suggest don't worry about any of this. You take care of yourself, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Thanks, Aurel. Thank you.
Aurel, thank you very much. Please say hello to Clinton for me. All right.
Yeah. He's the driver for the shuttle bus that takes us to Sloan Kettering.
He is a very cool man.
Yes. Yes.
Anyone else? Julie?
So if we have questions, we give them to Joe now. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm monitoring my emails almost daily and calling Joe maybe once every week or 2 weeks. If it's urgent, Joe will call me or I'll call Joe because I'm monitoring all the emails. Treatment starts tomorrow, 6 weeks of treatment. My hope is that I can come back next week. We'll see if there are any significant side effects, and if not, then I should be able to work, if not full-time, part-time.
There are many good first to have lunch places. Have you found them?
Yeah.
Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Good luck to URL. We're thinking of.
Let me just say one thing. Amendments to Kevin, when you have them, 23, 25, and 30, voting meetings, we're here with a show on Monday at 5:30 for the last departments. Frank?
Yeah, question for Joe. Pam's comment or concern about the size of the graphs and reading the numbers, is there any way that we can
enlarge?
Maybe reduce the number of graphs page to get the size a little bigger?
Yeah, we can do a different scale. We can do two slides per page. There'll be thicker packets, but we can do two slides per page.
Okay. The other thing is Andrea sent out an email for a meeting on the task group for TCAD.
Yes.
Two of the dates she picked are our voting meetings for the budget.
Okay. Did she have evening times on those days?
Both were evenings.
Okay. All right. We'll fix.
But so you may just double check.
Yeah, I will. We'll okay. Fix that. Thanks.
Thanks.
So could we get the colors?
Thank you.
It's going to be nicer.